Welcome to Off the Bench with Danny Cannell.
Back to throw, first and 10, the pass completes his tight end.
And Rajah Bell.
Bell has done everything. 22 for Rajah.
Saw the future of football right before your eyes. Just yell it out, man. He can't guard me.
What's up? Happy Monday. Welcome to Off the Bench with Danny Cannell and Rajah Bell. Happy belated Mother's Day to all the moms and wives out there who are listening. I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Does it make me a bad son if I didn't tweet a message, a personal message to my mom out there who's not on Twitter?
No. Did you tweet one to your wife?
I did not, but she's not really on Twitter either.
So no.
So that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I mean,
I had a couple people, because I put out like a Happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there, and I had a couple people like, oh, well, you can't even say Happy Mother's Day to your mom, and I'm like, she's not on Twitter.
Yeah, I don't.
She is on Instagram, which I didn't post there either.
Yes,
yeah, I could have. I could have helped myself out a little bit there.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm doing it on the podcast, which she doesn't listen to,
even
so
better.
I'm making it up for all of it.
I just took a picture of my wife and mom together in the same photo, which is very hard to find, by the way. I don't know why.
Right.
They usually take the pictures, I guess. But two of them together with my daughter. Happy Mother's Day to all the wonderful
Boom.
Women out there. Knock two birds out with one stone. I'm good to go.
There it is. All right. It was the game that everybody was looking forward to. It was the Cavaliers against Boston. So the Cavs go into Boston, and it was not even close.
Yep.
Cavs looked flat. Boston looked on point. They come out, completely dominate. LeBron struggled, only had 15. He was 5 of 15 from the field. He had a minus 32 for the game. He said he had zero level of concern at this point. But you, watching that game unfold, is this a Cleveland was flat, or is this Boston's flat out the better team?
There's a lot to unpack.
Yeah.
There really is. I'm going to start with the question about Boston being a better team. Yes, they are a better team from top to bottom than the Cavs are. Except for LeBron James. And LeBron James is the best player on the planet. So, to my next point, when LeBron James acts like the best player on the planet, they're going to be a markedly different team. And I don't feel like he acted like he was the best player on the planet yesterday. I wasn't sure if he came out flat or if he saw what the Boston defense was trying to do to him, because Brad Stevens is really good game planning defensively. They were one of the best defensive teams in the league all year long. You know, Marcus Morris has come out and said that he is, you know, as good as anyone except Kawhi on him. And he did a really good job, but he had a lot of help. And so they selectively double-teamed him yesterday, which, you know, I think you should do to any really, really good player. But they didn't only double-team him. They doubled him when he got close. They doubled him as he was about to make his approach to the rim. And then there were other pick-and-roll situations where they didn't double him. So they kept him off balance, which is what you need to do. Because of that, he looked very passive. And he came out and he looked like he said, well, if you're going to double me, you know, I've got capable players around me, like Kevin Love will make shots, and Rodney Hood will make shots, and Jordan Clarkson, and J.R. Smith, and Kyle Korver, but they didn't. And so, I don't care if you lose the series, go down swinging. And I don't feel like LeBron was swinging last night. And I think if you went and you really could get a really forthright answer from him, he would tell you that he has to be the best player on the planet for them to have a chance to beat the C's. And he wasn't that. He doesn't have to score 50, but he's got to try to take the game over like he's the best player on the planet and make them adjust. And he did none of that. The C's were the aggressor. They were at the rim. They were in attack mode. They've got way more players that can spread you out and take you to the rim off the bounce. It posed a huge problem for Cleveland. So LeBron, look, your only hope is that you click back into, like, I'm the best player on the planet mode and let's do this.
So I think I totally agree with you, but I think the supporting cast, those guys have to pick it up. And I felt like that was the difference in the Indiana and the Toronto series, because against Indiana, they didn't play great.
Right.
Indiana almost got them, took them 7 games. Toronto, you started getting more production from Kevin Love, from Tristan Thompson. They all started to be more consistent, so they were able to go out there. And LeBron was LeBron, so you had this perfect mix. This game, and this is the worst case scenario for the Cavs, is LeBron plays bad and Kevin Love goes 5 of 14 from the field. And, you know, you don't get much out of those other guys. So then that's how you have the recipe for a blowout.
It's easier for guys that are following LeBron to do what they do once they see LeBron carrying the load. You know what I mean? It's easier. Once you see LeBron's on, it's easier for you to be on. Now, we're all pros, and I wasn't necessarily wired like that because I love the playoffs. I wanted to be the dude in the playoffs, even though I wasn't good enough to be the dude in the playoffs. But they came out, and the Celtics were switching everything early, which means you were going to have mismatches across the floor. And they're doubling LeBron, which means now you've got four guys on offense, aside from LeBron, playing against three guys on defense because two of them are committed to LeBron. When that ball moves out of LeBron's hands, and usually it moves to someone and they're able to rotate and you move it and you move it, that guy's either going to have a shot or he's going to have a drive. I felt like the Cavs just settled for stationary, stagnant, long, contested jump shots, which is like the antithesis of what Boston was doing. Boston was dominating at the rim. You know, it was remarkable because usually nowadays, like, the three-point line is what kills you, and eventually they got to that. But early, it was, like, physical. I'm better than you. I'm more athletic. I'm going to take you to the rack. And I think some of those role players from Cleveland would have got going had they not settled for those early, like, casts of, like, long 30-foot jump shots and just put their head down once they had that mismatch and went to the rim, and they didn't do it.
So Marcus Morris, he said he was the second best at defending LeBron besides Kawhi. There's actually some analytics out there.
There's a stat for that?
At Second Spectrum had found out that LeBron has shot 33% in the half court over the last five seasons when Marcus Morris is the nearest defender.
Yeah.
Do you see something that, like, when you watch the matchup, is it a size thing where he's better? Is he all over him? Is it an intimidation factor? Like, what? Is he right?
I don't know. He gave LeBron a hard time last night. And I like to say as a defender, like, I'm only as good as my help. Mm-hmm. You know, and so, you know, I can do a good job on a guy, but these guys are so good offensively that eventually if you give him enough dribbles, he's going to get where he wants to go. So I need help. When he looks over my shoulder, he needs to see you looking at him. He needs to see Debo looking at him. So he knows, like, look, even if I beat Raja, I can't go anywhere. There's nowhere to go.
Right.
And so I think he had the help of his teammates. But there is something to be said for a guy getting under someone's skin, just being a little bit of a nuisance, somebody that
right.
I think Marcus Morris is tough enough that LeBron respects, like, that toughness level.
Man, Lance Stephenson is all up under all his skin. And that's why I think that series went seven. Like, it impacted him.
So there is something to be said for that. I mean, I can't get away from the fact that the Cavs, you know, shot 36% from the field. They hadn't made a three. I mean, they were 15% for the game, and I don't think they made one until 3 minutes to go in the third quarter, and they were still casting them up. Like, I know I'm harping on this, but you have to get to the rim. And if stationary ISO pick and roll basketball isn't doing it, then Ty Lue, you got to get us into some sets that get some movement and allows us to slip some screens or curl to the basket. But we have to get something going to the rim.
All right. So after the game, LeBron, he said he had no concern, not at all. He said he's been down 1-0, he's been down 2-0. He said he's not worried about it at all. But there was a moment in the post-game presser, and I don't know if you saw it or not, when there was a reporter, and she said, what happened at the start of the fourth quarter when there was a 7-0 Boston run? Did you see this?
I did see this, yeah.
So he goes through it, and he starts with the possession, and he says, well, so-and-so took – I can't even remember.
Yeah.
It's like, so-and-so took out the ball, went down to 2 seconds on the shot clock. Marcus Smart took a three from the corner. He's like, then I took the ball up the court and dished it. And, like, basically gave you a – second-by-second breakdown of those possessions through the 7-0 run, and everybody's, like, jaw hit the floor. Everybody was like, oh, my gosh, and Twitter blew up. People were like, this guy's a savant.
Right.
Your reaction?
That's pretty cool that he could do that, but I know a lot of guys that could do that.
Right.
I do. I mean, like,
you know, it was only, like, an hour before that moment.
Yeah, and, I mean, look, that's – first of all, I haven't been in LeBron James' shoes. Like, so I don't know how much he's got on his plate mentally. Mm-hmm. So it might be even more impressive than I think it is. But I do know guys that could do that. Like, I could detail for you what happens in a game as I'm going through the game because I just did it. You
right.
know what I mean? Like, Larry Brown used to be able to do it, and he'd blow me away because he'd watch us scrimmage. He was my coach in Philly and in Charlotte, and he would watch us play for like 5 minutes. And he could sit there and just watch it. He wasn't playing it, and he'd tell you where you were, like, in help defense. Like, you know, LeBron's telling you what happened in terms of who scored and where they got the shot from and stuff like that. Larry Brown could tell you, like, where the defense was and what the help side rotation man did when you made that. And so now he's watching five guys and remembering what five guys on the court are doing. So they're varying degrees of that. It was cool. But
yeah, I think it's a gift that certain people have, and its ability to recall things, and whether it's photographic memory, whether it's short term. Like, I don't think LeBron could go back in game two against Indiana and pull that type of recall.
Right.
But, like, I've played golf with guys, and you go out, and I think this is getting to, like, the gift part of where some people have it, some people don't. And you'll sit down after the round, you'll have a drink, a cigar, and
yeah.
They're talking about the round. And I've played with guys, and these aren't great golfers, these are pretty good golfers, and they'll say, well, remember the third hole and that approach shot? And I can't remember it
because
once I do something, I kind of forget it and focus on the next thing. So that's like my philosophy in sports. So I don't recall the things that great, But I think it's just a gift that some people have and some people don't. Obviously, LeBron has it. It
could be a gift and a curse, though. Like, yeah, no, yeah, I could, because true. I'm the guy that could tell you like exactly what happened on 18 holes of golf. I can recount every stroke.
You can.
I can. But I'll also hang on to stuff a little longer. Like, right. And in sport, you have to have a short memory sometimes. Like, you have to be able to say, look, I shanked that. I'm on to the next. And let that process it. Let it go. And so that'll hurt you sometimes, too.
Yeah, for sure. Let's do it. Rockets, Warriors, tonight, 9 o'clock, TNT. This is the matchup that I think everybody knows is probably going to determine the NBA champion.
Yep.
It's the Western Conference Finals. It's the Golden State Warriors versus your Houston Rockets. You've been on them for a long time.
I have.
It's your boy, Mike D'Antoni.
Yeah.
They've looked good. It's exactly where we thought would be. Where are you now? Are you going? Are you still rolling with them?
Yeah, I'll still roll with them. But I do want to say, and I've said it before, they didn't look like the offensive team that they needed to be through the first few rounds of the playoffs. They have to be better than they were. It didn't look like it was clicking the way Mike's offense should click. There were guys who individually had really good performances, but that's not the beauty of that offense. The beauty of that offense is when they're like it's choreographed and they're, you know, it's much more ISO than Golden State, but it still creates a lot of opportunity through natural flow for other guys when they run that high pick and roll. So if they look like that, and I do think they'll win game one. I think they have to win game one.
Playing at home.
Yeah.
Home crowd. You've got to get off. Try to get
more than any other series. Yeah. I think that they have to. James Harden needs it. Chris Paul needs it. And if they need it, everybody on that roster, Mike D'Antoni needs it. So they have to win game one. But I think they'll get it. And I think defensively, like, there are a lot of questions about how Houston's going to play Golden State. But defensively, they've got a lot of pieces. I mean, they've got Eric Gordon's, they've got Trevor Reed's, they got Luke Mbamute, they have PJ Tucker, Gerald Green. Like, all of those, minus maybe Eric Gordon, are really, really good wing defenders. Any one of them could play Kevin Durant or Draymond Green and switch all the way down the line to Steph Curry. Now, they might not all be first team all defenders, but they're all like known to be good defensive players. And I think that's going to help a lot. They're deeper than Golden State. Golden State is more top-heavy. They got better talent, 1 through 5. Houston's a deeper team.
So the Warriors come out with their death lineup, Hampton's 5. I don't like either
it's
name.
Five.
I think they're both corny. Like,
right.
Let's just go with their smaller lineup. Like, right. Like, let's just call it something normal. So they didn't use it at all in their 3 regular season games versus the Rockets. They've only played with it 54 minutes together in the postseason, 127 minutes in the regular season. So they really haven't done it that much.
Right.
From both standpoints, from the Warriors, is it hard for them to get adjusted through the play, like to get to this point where it's smooth? And for the Rockets, having not seen much of it on film or in person at all, could this be the difference maker of the series?
Ultimately, I think.
Or do we all make a big deal out of it because of the stupid name?
Well, we make a big deal out of it because ultimately, like, that's their best lineup.
Right.
And teams play their best lineups when they can. And so it will determine, to some degree, the success that they have against the Rockets and, conversely, whether the Rockets can defend it or not. But I think there's enough data and film out there on the lineup, whether it was against Houston or not, for them to get a good feel on what they want to do. Like, Coach, I think it's Jeff Bezilik is the defensive guy there. He's got enough. His guys that he trusts have enough info on what they run when that lineup's on the court that they'll have a game plan. Whether it works or not remains to be seen. The problem with the death lineup, right, as opposed to, like, the Rockets offensively, is, like, the Rockets, you know, are 14% of the time they're in pick and roll, like, ISO situations, right? ISO, that's a lot. And the Warriors are, like, 6.6% of the time. And so when you're running ISO ball, it's a lot easier. You gifted ISO players – really gifted and can score against a lot of different, you know, looks defensively, but it's pretty stationary, and it's easy for me to account and do and make sure I fulfill my assignment, right? My assignment is to touch Danny on the roll and then crack back out to the shooter because somebody else is going to pick Danny up at the rim. That can get handled if you're stationary and it's coming at you all the time. While at 6.6% of the time, like, that's a really small number. The Warriors are running a lot of continuity stuff. There's people movement. There's ball movement. There's screening action on the weak side where I might not be locked in, you know, eyes on man and ball and seeing, and boom, I'm slipped to the basket. And so it's harder to guard. And so you can have guys that are game to defend, but because they're not stationary, because they're moving, it's harder to guard. So that means, again, Houston has to be that much better offensively to have a chance in the series.
So 2 best offenses this season. Points per 100 possession, Warriors 112, Rockets 112. They are both first and second ranked offenses. Historically, these are 2 all-time great offenses. Is it crazy to think that actually the team that plays better defense is the one that's going to win?
Yeah. But I
that would favor the Warriors, right? Because they've in their championship runs, they've played really good defense. This season, they haven't because they don't care.
Right, but Houston's been a really good defensive team this year, too. The question is Capella, right? And like it's somewhere in our notes here, but it really is the question because when Capella is on the floor, I think the Rockets are a better offensive team. I don't know statistically what it says, but when he's been on the floor defensively, all right, when he's been on the floor defensively against that death lineup, the Rockets have 127.5 defensive rating. That's horrible. Mm-hmm. And if you can't figure out a way with the death lineup or the Hamptons 5 lineup on the floor for Clint Capella to be effective defensively, then you got to take him off the court. And they're not nearly the same team offensively because he presents a real problem for defenses himself when he picks at the top of the key and rolls straight down the middle and catches lobs. It puts defenses in a really precarious situation. So they've got to figure out whether they're going to switch all pick and rolls with Clint Capella when he's out there. He's adequate, kind of like Tristan Thompson guarding guards out on the perimeter, but not great. Or you're going to, you know, you have to figure out what you're going to do. Like, that's a coach's job, and that is going to be as big a key as anything in this series, whether or not he's effective defensively against that lineup.
Who do you think has the best series? I'm going to give you three names.
Right.
Is it James Harden?
Mm-hmm.
Is it Kevin Durant? Or is it Steph Curry?
Kevin Durant. Yeah, I think Kevin Durant.
He was absolutely incredible through this stretch of the playoffs. Like, there were a lot of people saying, hey, he's playing better than LeBron James. I don't know if I would have ever gone that far. And again, it's kind of like they're different players.
They are.
They do different things. But he's looked incredible. He's looked the part. I would tend to agree with you probably. But I think if the Rockets are to win, Harden's going to have one of those series where he averages like 35.
Yeah.
You know, if
I don't trust him.
I know. To do it, he might have a game like that.
Yeah,
He'll drop 40 or 45.
I don't trust his consistency in the playoffs. I mean, I've got a sample size now. I want to trust him, but I don't trust him. And again, like him and Chris Paul, like they have to be on.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, that's the beauty of Golden State. Like if KD's off, you got Klay Thompson, you got Steph Curry, heck, you got Draymond. Like you have, you know, Iguodala. You have people that can come in, and because the ball's moving and people are moving, they can get buckets. But you've got two primary ball handlers. You know, Eric Gordon's got to have a really good series for them. Eric Gordon's got to be really consistent because he is the guy that can kind of supplement if one of those two guys are off. The rest of those guys can shoot, but he can actually play make. And the NBA is trending now where you need a bunch of guys that can play make, not only shoot the ball. So Eric Gordon's got to be consistent. And then, you know, one of them could have an off night if he goes crazy. But by and large, they both need to be really good.
So who are you going with? You think the Rockets get it done?
I'm going to go with the Rockets. I'm not changing
now.
Yeah, I'm
going
to go with the Rockets.
Boom, all in.
Yep.
I'm going to go with the Warriors because I said it like 3 weeks ago. I'm like, as much as we've talked about all this stuff, who could possibly knock them off? I think it's going to be Warriors over Cavs. Even after the Cavs.
You still think the Cavs?
Probably. If I'm smart, I would switch.
Yeah.
But they'll probably
come
back.
Look, dude, it was one game.
If LeBron ain't panicked, I'm not
right,
panicked.
Right, it's one game.
I'm saying it's going to be Warriors over Cavs in the long run. All right, we have some other NBA action going on tomorrow night as the NBA draft lottery takes place. You looked at me, there was nuts when I said, hey, is that when the balls drop?
I was like, who's going through puberty here? What are we talking about?
Yeah, so they have the lottery balls will come out, and they'll find out who gets these top picks in the draft. The odds of who gets the number one pick favor the Phoenix Suns.
Right.
They have a 25% chance of getting the number one pick. The Grizzlies are in second at 20% chance. Mavs, Hawks, goes on down the list. So for you, out of these teams, who do you think is like the most desperate for the top pick? Or doesn't even matter? Like, is it a top three pick is what you need the most?
I think in this year's draft, top three pick is gold. You've got a lot of names out there.
There's not that much separation between one, two, and three.
I mean, there could be. I haven't been watching the kids work out and through their pre-draft, and quite frankly, I wasn't watching college basketball to that degree. Mm-hmm. So my eyeballs tell me, having seen all of those guys, you know, a little bit, that there isn't that much difference.
Right.
Now, what you saw like last year, I didn't think so either, although I thought Jason Tatum was the best player in the draft. And I think Boston, you know, like they stole it from Philly. Philly made the wrong pick. So you never know what one of those guys is going to do once they get to the NBA. But I think top three, you'd feel really, really good. In terms of desperation and needing the pick, it's the Suns.
Yeah.
Like, but not just needing the pick. They have to get it right.
Right.
They've got a really, really good player in Devin Booker. They have to find someone to go with him. They have to find either the Batman or the Robin to Devin Booker. to continue building.
They've almost done a little mini process. Like
they've
been awful. They have one of the youngest rosters in the NBA.
Yeah.
They've got a critical piece in Devin Booker. Like if they can keep building to it, then you add a veteran piece and then you're like, all right, you're not that far off.
Yes, they have to find the guy. And I think, you know, I don't know what their need is in terms of what position, but they think if they get a top three pick, they're going to be in good shape.
All right, cool. All right, so watch out for that. I think it is fascinating to see that unfold. Because I don't know if I like the NBA process, but it's different. It's different than the NFL where it's just, hey, the worst gets first pick. So I kind of like that there's a little bit of drama that unfolds.
You know who's extra salty, though, today? Ooh. Like not only did they get smashed last night, but you don't see the pick that have from Brooklyn. Like you don't see Brooklyn up here. The Cavs got shafted again.
Yes, they did. Let's do some overreaction and proper reaction.
Yep.
There's been a bunch of stuff that's gone on. One of those was Tiger Woods, y'all.
Yeah.
At Sawgrass.
Yeah.
Came out there Saturday, put up a 30
on
the front nine.
I'm cheesing right now. I can't help it. I'm cheesing.
I was pumped up too. 30 on the front nine, you know, shot 65, would rocket up the leaderboard. Yesterday comes out on fire, front nine again. He's on fire. He gets to second place in the leaderboard. He's thinking, uh-oh, Webb Simpson could fall apart. He's going to choke. But Tiger kind of fell apart a little bit, but still put together two rounds. So we've seen Tiger Woods looking pretty sharp. So is it an overreaction or a proper reaction that Tiger Woods will finish in the top 10 at next month's U.S. Open?
It's an underreaction.
Oh,
it's an
really?
Underreaction. Tiger Woods will win the 2018 U.S. Open.
Right.
He will win it.
So far on the Off the Bench podcast, we've had a guarantee that'll win the Masters from me.
Yep.
And now we've got a U.S. Open guarantee. Sooner or later,
somebody's
got
to hit, right?
We'll throw in these guarantees out there and we'll look like geniuses. Yep.
You know what? I mean, he said it in his, what's his quote after final round? I really played really good today. I hit it so good, Woods said after. I had control of it from tee to green. I made some putts. It felt good on basically every facet of the game. It's weird not to really miss hit a shot today. That's what I took away from it.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't the fact that he came up short and had a little bit too much spin on 14 and it came back off the false front. It wasn't that he missed the putt on 16. It wasn't that he was like, well, he was like 3 or 4 yards short on 17.
Yeah, yeah.
But that wasn't it. It was that I didn't see the loose shots. You know, he typically through a round will have something working and then he'll hit just a really loose shot. And then he'll follow it with a couple, you know, you didn't see those. I mean, he was hunting, you know, that ball striking was there. He was on pins. He was aggressive. And so just, I don't care if he wins. I've said this before. Like, I don't care if he wins these tournaments necessarily. Quite frankly, I don't care if he wins the U.S. Open. I just want to see him continue to play good golf and trend. And eventually, I think, if he does that, he's going to win something. And so that I was really excited just to see that.
Me too. So I have a theory on Tiger Woods. And we've talked about this a lot on the podcast about competing from behind.
Right.
I think it's easier to compete when you're behind.
Yeah.
Tiger is crushing it on the weekends because he's out of the tournament. Like, he's barely making the tournament. He's out there. He's loose. Now, the question is because I think a lot of it is mental now because he's physically back. Like,
right.
You can see physically he's back. You're talking about the drives. He's bombing them. Everything looks awesome. But mentally, I think in the first couple rounds, I think he feels a little bit more of the pressure. I think he feels a little bit more of the nerves.
Maybe right.
He presses a little bit. Doesn't play as well. But at least he's making the cuts. And then once he's kind of out of it, he comes out and he's lights out. So my biggest question is, can he overcome that? And I think the answer is yes. Like, I think he's gaining confidence. I think he's gaining. It's part of this.
It's the process.
Absolutely.
It really is.
Him coming back from a major surgery, and this is all part of it. So I think I would say proper reaction. I wouldn't say, because I think top 10 is reasonable.
With
him, the way he's playing.
Winning.
Yeah, winning.
Winning.
There it is. Boom. That's yours. I'll go top 10, so I'll back up on this one. You can go all in with a win up at Shinnecock up in Long Island. So you need to go watch that thing.
I do need to. Do we have a hook? Do we have a connect?
I'll hook it up.
We'll make
it happen. All right, next up, for overreaction or proper reaction, Andrew Luck will not be the Colts starter week one. So he had shoulder surgery. Torn right labrum in January of 2017. It's been forever. Not 18, 2017.
Right.
Missed a lot of last season. Still rehabbing. Still hasn't thrown a regular size ball. So their GM, Chris Ballard, recently told PFT Live he's got a program specifically laid out that puts his timeline to get back in training camp. He didn't want to skip a step. Blah, 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 blah. Not rushing. I don't want to say rushing, but, you know, he felt the pressure coming back and he couldn't get right back.
I think it's a proper reaction.
You do?
Well, only because, and I didn't know this before you said it, but if he hasn't thrown a proper size ball, that gives me a little pause there. I mean, like that,
We're in May, so it's only 3 or 4 months away to week one.
That's a huge progression. You haven't thrown a regular size football, and you're going to be like gripping it and ripping it.
That is concerning, but I think he's starting week one. Okay. I think it's an overreaction. I think they're just taking it extremely slow because I think they rushed it back the last time.
Right.
He's been banged up throughout his entire career. I think they are taking this as much precaution as they possibly can. Because
I hope you're right.
Franchise. Because if he does, if he still has problems, like if he goes out there and he's Chad Pennington with a little like pop shoot, like a little
like peewee gun,
he's going to be a totally different quarterback. And that's Chad Pennington had shoulder surgery. That's why he lost a lot of arm strength.
Right.
So I'm sure that's why they're concerned about it. But I think he'll still be the starter week one. All right, NBA news. This is from last week. So as the Toronto Raptors got bounced, swept by Cleveland, you felt like something had to change, right? So the change they made was firing Dwayne Casey.
Yeah.
Was that the overreaction or was it the proper reaction by the Toronto Raptors?
Could I take both? Like, I think it was an overreaction because I don't think Dwayne Casey is the problem there. I think, you know, Dwayne Casey, he was 59-23 this year, 320-238 over regular seasons, a 57% win percentage there in Toronto. He has been a part of, and maybe, I don't know to what degree because I'm not there, but a huge part with Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan of the reshaping of this franchise, one that is now winning Eastern Conference regular season titles. If you had said that 8 or 9 years ago, people would be like a statue for Dwayne Casey. Unfortunately, they keep running into the Cavs in the playoffs. There were a lot of people that ran into Michael Jordan and the Bulls, Indiana Pacers, Reggie Miller, the Knicks. Like, all of those teams were good teams. And, yeah, the coach ultimately is responsible for that. But, like, you're running into the best player on the planet in his prime. You're just one of those teams that is doomed. Here's the problem, though, and this is why I think it is the proper reaction. Because you've got Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan locked up through 2020. They're owed $60 million, right? And then Ibaka's got another $22 million on the books. You don't have any flexibility to move the pieces there.
Right.
You don't have any flexibility to move the players. And something has to change. And so Dwayne Casey ultimately is the easiest piece to move. And so for that reason, it's the proper reaction. But I do think it's an overreaction.
Right. He's the sacrificial lamb, basically, is what happened. So I was okay with it when it came out. There were some people that were like, how could you do this? He was voted coach of the year by the NBA coaches. He was voted coach of the year. There was a lot of speculation why it happened. He benched DeMar DeRozan like 7 minutes left, didn't put him back in the game. So maybe there was some contention in that relationship.
Yeah.
But there was a report over the weekend that their GM, Masai Ujiri, actually, with the game winner, when LeBron caught it, dribbled down the floor and cut the floater that was beautiful. There was a report that after the game, the GM stormed into the Raptors dressing room at Quicken Loans Arena, just out of sight of most of the players, but not out of earshot, and rebuked Casey in the coach's office for failing to double team James. And then he said, after careful consideration, I've decided this is a very difficult but necessary step the franchise must make. As a team, we are constantly trying to grow and improve in order to get to the next level. So for me, I felt like this was, all right, Dwayne Casey has done a great job taking the team to this far, but he's been there 7 years.
Yeah.
He's 0 for his last 10 attempts at LeBron. Like, it's not like, and here's what else I think killed him.
Yeah.
You just watched Indiana, who's not as talented as you, take him to 7 games. So there's a bunch of like all these forces were coming together and something had to go. And the easiest thing to do in the NBA is move the coach.
Yep.
Fire the coach because it's hard to move players. It's hard to blow up a roster. It's easier to get a new voice in there.
Here's the thing, though. Like, LeBron, LeBron is, I don't know. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah,
you're right.
But, that's like the result. Like, Nick Saban has had that. I think that's Nick Saban's most impressive stat is how many SEC coaches he's gotten fired.
Right.
Because Les Miles, he was great. Awesome record.
Couldn't beat Bam.
Just couldn't get through with Nick Saban. Yep. He got fired. Like, you see it happen in sports. Is it the right thing to do? We don't know. All I would say this. Toronto better have somebody that's better than Dwayne Casey.
Grass is not always greener.
Exactly.
Yeah.
As a lot of people have found out. All right, next up, overreaction or proper reaction. The Sixers will add either LeBron, Kawhi Leonard, or Paul George this offseason.
It's a proper reaction. It's a proper reaction. They've come out. I thought it was great that they came out and actually said at some point, when the time's right, Brett Brown said, I think we need help to win a championship. Boom. It's in your face. Mm-hmm. There are only a few guys in the NBA. A few guys are going to be free agents that are going to be able to help get you over that hump. It's not going to be a player like me, for instance. It's a big dog. It's a It's an alpha, and they've got $30 million in cap space, which will get you one of them. So I don't think that's an underreaction. You got Paul George, you got Kawhi, you got LeBron. You have to figure out, if you're Philly, which one of those is the right piece to put with your young players. Which one of them isn't going to take away and stunt the growth of the young guys you have on that team, because that's really critical.
Well, let me ask you, because you have, let's say there's a very real interest from LeBron in going to the Sixers. And obviously that would stunt the growth of Ben Simmons, because they play a very similar position. Yes. They do a lot of the similar things. Like, Ben Simmons isn't going to sit on a wing and start hitting three-pointers. He doesn't have a jump shot. If you're the Sixers, would you pass on LeBron?
No.
Right. So I then wouldn't. You would kind of put Ben Simmons on the back burner?
I couldn't do that. It would have to be – the conversation would have to be with LeBron. LeBron has come out on record and saying that he can play with anybody. And his game, he's a basketball player. He's not a point guard. He's not a power forward. He's a player. And so he'll figure out how to play with anybody. And because sometimes he plays with guys that can't do what he does, he winds up taking over games. It would have to be a conversation where, like, listen, this is our primary ball handler. Like, Ben has to be primary. Kind of like Kyrie and LeBron were 50-50. Like, Kyrie would take over games at times. LeBron would play second fiddle. I watched him do it. He can do it. The problem then is you don't have enough shooting on the court to create the type of space that a Ben Simmons would need, because he does not shoot the ball. So you'd have to be very careful and very selective. But the answer to your question, short answer, is no. I would not pass up on LeBron, because, in my opinion, that's a championship.
Right.
You get a championship when you can get one.
Right. I think it's going to be fascinating to see if LeBron would go there. Paul George also has done a lot of flirting with L.A. Like, he want to go to Philly, where there's a better chance to win a championship, or is he the type of guy that wants to go to L.A.?
That's home for him.
Right.
Yeah. So I don't know.
It's going to be fascinating offseason. Once again, for the NBA, as the drama is going to unfold over July 4th, you know, it's always around that time. You're going to see guys getting wooed and recruited to different places.
I wish I got wooed.
I know, right? Me too. I never got that. I never got that in the NFL. Well, all right, let's get our boy Debo involved. It's our time for some topics, baby. Debo, what do you got for us?
We have to get Raja involved, because we never got his reaction to this one. David Price paid a hefty price to use his hands to pitch a baseball. $217 million, actually. Well, last week, he couldn't pitch a baseball because he was diagnosed with carpal tunnel. Lots of people think due to his Fortnite addiction. Price is an admitted gamer and Fortnite lover, but doesn't think the injury is connected. Should he quit Fortnite, Raja?
Oh, bro. Look, it's hard for me to quit Fortnite. I've been asked a few times. So, yeah, if it's going to cost you your damn day job, David Price, quit Fortnite. Or rate it in, man. Put, like, some, like, get yourself a little timer. Sit it there. Like, know that your bread is buttered. You can't afford Fortnite without the damn, what's he got, a fastball?
Million.
What's he, a fastball?
He's filthy.
He's nasty.
But he
should have
trouble.
A lot for two.
Hey, yeah, exactly.
You guys have no respect for this. My bad. Yeah. But Fortnite is crazy addictive. Like, it is really like a...
So then why would you tell, like, if you're telling a smoker to stop smoking, you tell him to stop. You don't say, hey, let's go down to one cigarette. He needs to quit.
He needs
to find a different game.
Cold turkey.
And I guess I don't know the game. Like, is it different repetitive motions?
Well, you can play it on a keyboard. You could use it as...
That's what he needs to do. He needs to switch it up.
Right. Yeah, there you go, right? Sometimes playing PS4 or your Xbox 360, sometimes on the thing, right?
Yeah.
Exercise different muscles.
Switching it up. Yeah. It's going to be his livelihood. It's happened before. There was a pitcher that was put on DL for playing Guitar Hero.
Are you serious?
Much Guitar Hero. Because that's baseball players.
That's ridiculous.
Especially pitchers. They have so much free time.
Right.
Like, and if I was... It's interesting, because if you're a manager, would you rather have your guy playing video games or out at the club, like hanging out till 3 a.m.? Probably you'd rather until now than you're seeing carpal tunnel. You're like, come out to the club a couple nights.
Right.
Drake, a noted Fortnite player, and he's often more visible on the Toronto sidelines than Dwayne Casey, so why not be the guy to replace him?
Stop.
Meta World Peace, a very credible source, tells TMZ that he should replace Dwayne Casey as the guy on the Raptor sidelines. How many games would he win if he was the Raptors coach?
20. He'd win 20 games.
I think he'd win 35.
Talent wins games. Stop. I don't even know what meta.
Seriously.
I love meta, but
serious
cut it out.
Question for you, though. How many games would Drake win as head coach of the Warriors? I think I could win 50 games.
Yeah, he'd win. He'd win,
roll the ball out.
He'd win at least 45.
I think he would, too.
Yeah, probably 50.
Right. Yep. But the Raptors ain't happening. As much as he would, oh, my gosh, that would be so annoying.
No, there's some interesting personalities there, too. Like,
yeah.
You know, people discount, like, X's and O's are one thing.
It's all the heads.
People
stuff.
Discount how much it means to, like, to
managing
egos and personalities.
Yep.
Yeah.
Sure.
That's definitely something that happened this year in Cleveland. So we remember LeBron's not-so-subtle subtweet a couple of years ago. Stop trying to find a way to fit out and just fit in. I think that's when you were there, Raja.
Right.
Not about you, I think. It was probably about Kevin Love. But he probably could have visited this season with Isaiah Thomas, the Cavs, known for their elaborate handshakes. IT, not about that life. He said, that's not what I want to do. I just score the basketball. He didn't do too much of that either this season.
Yeah, listen, bro, take the damn handshake. Like, you know, like make it something basic, Cable. Maybe that could have been the joke, right? Like,
right.
Everybody's got these elaborate ones. I'm just coming up and we'll do basic, Cable. We had handshakes when we were in Phoenix and everybody had their own little flavor. Maybe it was
every
just simple.
Every single player on the roster. You had one with every single person.
I did not have one with every single player, but we had Eddie House really was the one that had them. So everybody that came out in a starting lineup, he had a different little thing that he did with you. And so ours was kind of, you know, basic, Cable, and we flexed. And but look, dude, when LeBron wants to shake your hand, shake the man's hand, bro.
Right. It's like, you got to kiss the ring.
Come on, dog. You're about to make $100-some million. Kiss, right. Like, exactly.
Pay your respects.
Right.
And this, it's kind of corny, but it also, like, that type of stuff does build camaraderie.
It does.
Like, you kind of like it and have fun with it. Like, why do you have to be so, like, old man, get off my lawn, IT? Fall in line. Just do it.
A couple more here. J. Cole, he's on tour soon. He was all over Miami this weekend. But not the Cole we're talking about in the rap world. We're talking about Cowboys wide receiver Cole Beasley, who dropped The Autobiography, his debut album, over the weekend. We listened to one of his songs a couple months ago on the podcast, now the full album. He said, for this album to be a success, for me, it's really about just opening the door for people looking past the athletes trying to rap to he's just a rapper who happens to play football.
Wow.
That's never going to happen.
Next level. Hey, Debo, watch your mouth. You never know. Cole Beasley spitting fire.
Yeah. Hey, look, we heard the track. It wasn't bad. It was pretty good. So.
It's funny. Do you think an athlete would ever be taken seriously?
No.
I don't think so either. Like, because I think it's an industry where, and it's like every industry, you kind of have to be in it and know people, and they have to respect you and look at you a certain way. And if you're a football player, I think they're going
to
look at you
as
a football player.
You know what? If you said, listen, I love rap more than I love football. I'm turning in my pads and my helmet. I'm now a rapper. Like, and you were legit,
right?
Maybe then, like, you know what I mean? But yeah. Like moonlighting as something,
right?
You're not going to be taken seriously.
No, they just won't ever get that same shine.
Actually, up to number 11 on the iTunes hip-hop/rap album charts.
What?
So not bad. Final topic here: a tale of matching tattoo superstar quarterback Carson Wentz and his fiance got matching ink. It says agape, which is a Greek word meaning the highest form of love.
Technically,
is this ever
it's
a smart idea?
Technically, agape. It's agape. I'll help out Debo there.
Agape.
It's right on his. It's like on his forearm right here, and they're holding hands, and like falls in line perfectly together. I saw this, and I was out to dinner with my wife. We had a nice little date night for Mother's Day, and I asked her. I was like, oh, and I would not have any answer. I was like, would you ever want to do this?
Yes.
And she's like, nah. She's like, no. And then I was like, well, what about, because I've thought about the tattoo for
the
rings.
Ring. Yeah.
Putting it under the ring. And I would probably still wear a ring, but put it under there.
Right.
And she was like, she's like, but, and she pointed out something very astute observation. She said, all the real housewives have done that, and it always ends up bad. Like, they always end up divorced.
Right.
So there's a history. Like, I'm a little concerned for Carson Wentz and his wife. Like, I don't know, the matching tats.
Yeah, that's, it's too
pronounced.
Go get yourself something like unique tats or unique,
right?
Like in case
right.
It doesn't go well, you're not walking around. Right. Like, get yourself something
right
and unique.
So my wife said we could do her name's Cordy with a C.
Yeah,
and so because she's like, oh, you could get CK and I could get DK, and she got a little mad at me because I said if it didn't work out, I could just make it to a D, just kind of fill it in the C. She did not like that comment. So if you guys are listening out there, don't even joke about that type of stuff.
Yeah, that's a touchy subject.
And I would avoid the couple's tats.
Yeah.
No, it's just me. You never know.
I'm with you.
You never know what can happen. All right. That's the type of advice you get here on Off the Bench. It's invaluable. You can't live without it. Thanks for checking us out. Hopefully you guys are back next time. Make sure you go subscribe and download on iTunes. Leave us a five-star review in the comment section. Ask us a question. We will answer them on our five-star Q&A on Friday. And as always, go follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Cannell and Bell. Have a good one.